This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong, and you're tuned in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. On July 15, the whole world will be watching the proceedings in the World Cup finals in Moscow. However, back here at home and at the Axiata Arena, a fight for a goal of another kind will be happening in what's being billed as the Fight of Champions. The Argentine fighter Lucas Mattiasi and Filipino legend Manny Pacquiao are set to brawl it out for the welterweight championship, with Pacquiao gunning for his 9th title, while Mattiasi will be defending his title for the first time. Although the lead up to the event was plagued with financial difficulties and uncertainty, the duo is now confirmed to be in the squared circle in Bukit Jalil. With them, Malaysian boxer Tina Talayan will be looking to continue his 5-0 streak in the undercard. He is one of two boxers that will be wearing the Jalo Gumilang on the global stage, and today he's here in the studio with his manager Anil Kumar, who by the way also happens to be a referee, a ring announcer and a boxing journalist, together to tell us and preview his upcoming fight, as well as tell the story of where his debut fight happened, where he knocked his opponent out in 25 seconds.
Pro boxing, your first fight is most important fight. My whole gym, Vladimir Boxing Gym, my coaches, my manager and my promoter all asking, this is your first step, so make sure it will be like remarkable
right
place for you. So that's it, 25 second knockout.
Did you think that you were doing 25 seconds?
My coach and I was planned within one round, but I'm not think that I can make it within 30 seconds.
All right, cool. Anil, can you talk to us a bit about how, you know, you've seen Tina's development throughout the years, you know, even past his debut, and, you know, the upcoming fight, July 15, will be one of his biggest fights ever. Can you just give me a rundown of the development of Tina over the years?
Well, Tina began his journey into boxing ever since he was an amateur, since he was 15 years of age. And that's when he started off as an amateur. And throughout his entire amateur career, Tina has managed to accumulate 98 victories, which is unheard of, actually, within the amateur boxing scene. He has only lost a couple of fights, which is also due to some technical decisions. But he has shown tremendous, tremendous level of improvement throughout his 98 fights, that we have identified him as a potential talent for us to bring him out of the amateur boxing scene and turn him into a professional. Plus, what makes him also special is that, as you already know, he is a southpaw. And you don't really find many southpaw boxers. The majority consensus is that most boxers are expected to be orthodox boxers.
Right.
Finding a southpaw is like looking for a needle in a haystack in boxing.
Right.
And, you know, the very mention of the word southpaw in an opponent for boxing, the guy immediately starts thinking, oh my God, what did I get myself into? So Tina imposes that amount of fear.
So it is an advantage.
It is an absolute advantage because, you generally, when you're sparring and when you're training in the gym, you only get the opportunity to spar with guys who are orthodox fighters who are generally right-handed. You very seldom you get to come by a guy who is left-handed. So in simulating the entire environment of fighting, you only get to simulate the fighting motion against a guy who's orthodox. But it's real difficult to simulate that against a guy who's southpaw.
All right. Yeah. Tina, your upcoming fight, July 15, you're 5-0 now. Hopefully you make it 6-0.
For sure.
How are you preparing, man, for the fight?
For this event, I get to know I'm going to fight for March. So my boss, my promoter, my coaches already told me, man, you're going to fight as soon as possible, get ready. But they didn't tell me that there's a big fight coming in KL.
Right, you just thought it would be fight.
It's just a fight. I was okay, let's train. Okay, so normally I start train, and when it's get near, I get excited. So, mega fight, Lucas Mattiasi and Manny Pacquiao. I've been always seeing them in the phone, like TVs only one. It's a dream, even though for all boxers, that it's a dream fighting alongside with them.
Did you meet Manny when he came down?
Yep, I meet him twice, once at Philippines. I've been trained there around 2 months. So, once I meet him there and here second time. So far, my coaches was starting to train me. He came all over from Uzbekistan, came here, trained me. So it's been already going to be 2 months. I've been trained with him. So now I'm going to under training camp.
Right. So things are intensifying right now. Take us through your daily training schedules now.
Daily. 6 days in a week, Monday to Saturday, twice in a day.
Okay. Train.
So 2 hours morning, 2 hours night. So depends on my coach schedule. He will see what should he give today, what should not.
Okay, we'll talk a bit about the coach and what he brings to your game a bit later. But your upcoming opponent from India, what do you know about him? I read somewhere that very little details about him is out there, right? So does that impact your preparation in any way for the fight?
Can't say in that way. Not an impact, even though it's like, for me, a challenge. We can say it as a challenge because my coach, he know, because he was there when he was fight with my teammate. Mm. He fight with one of Uzbek boxer, so my coach was there. He know what to do, so he now training me. Mm. So it will be good.
I guess behind every boxer, there's a great team, you know, kind of like scouting and analyzing the opponents. Is that in your resume?
Well, I've always been involved in boxing ever since I was 18. Mm. I have many facades to myself when it comes to boxing. I've been a journalist. I'm a boxing commentator. I'm a ring announcer. I ring announce for big boxing fights. I've done technical jurisdiction. I've done refereeing. I've been
all
a judge.
Across the board.
Yeah, so I have
in the ring, though. Have you been in the ring?
Yeah, he's a ring announcer. He's the best ring announcer.
That's by far
Asia.
My only participation in the ring as an announcer, but not as a fighter. No.
I like a spot, man. You watch the guys fight.
Yeah.
Okay. So seeing as this is a big fight, you were just talking about training camps, that sort of thing. But in, doing your workouts, are you really doing anything different to ramp up this fight?
How to say, I get some extra help. Vitamins, like cow milks, like, how to say, something
it's
helps
mix,
me.
Yeah, it's a mix of several different elements.
Yeah.
Because it's really crucial that we make sure that Tina doesn't overtrain.
Okay.
Because, overtraining often can cause the athlete not to be able to peak.
Right.
Because when athletes train, they start camping for maybe 6 or 8 weeks, depending on how how much notice or time they have to prepare for a fight.
Right.
And it's really essential to gradually decrease the intensity of the training as they get closer to fight day. It's also a mix of his nutrition. So Tina has to make sure that he has really low carb intake, because he has to step on the scales at no more than 147 pounds, and no less than about 146.5. We want to make sure that he doesn't lose too much of weight,
right?
Because otherwise then he would lose out on the power that he has, because that's pretty much his money punch, because he's got a power punch. So it's a mix of his nutrition, mix of his training, his rest. And apart from that, Tina right now has started a new recovery regime with our sponsors. Tina has a sponsor called Yap Chan Kor. They have been giving us tremendous level of support in helping Tina recover, because for the amount of training that Tina does, it actually takes a toll on his body, because muscles eventually get sore. Mm. And at times in the mornings when he gets up, So Yap Chan Kor does a great job in, getting his recovery up to speed.
I guess it's all about managing the fitness level as well, right?
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
One thing I do want to know, though, training not in the ring, but the stare downs.
Yep.
Do you train for the stare downs?
For the wins.
He trained me. He asked me to do, face off, get your face anger mood. Like, I was always like,
don't smile.
What? Yeah. I want to smile. But
you see, it's interesting that many people tend to overlook the weigh-in, because in Western countries, especially
it's a
in
big deal.
Yeah, North America, South America, and Europe, where there are big boxing fights, the weigh-in is a weigh-in ceremony by itself.
Yeah, it's a whole set. Yeah.
Yeah, it is by itself another spectacle that many boxing aficionados look forward to.
Yep.
That pretty much creates an elevates the level of excitement in the fans.
And the entertainment.
Yeah,
value.
And the
trash talk, all of
he can't
that.
He can't do much trash talking yet. Not yet. He has to maintain his professionalism. He has to win a title first before he does that. But at least keep a straight face, Tina. Yeah. Okay, come for the win.
Tina, I try my best.
Yeah. Tina, let's go back to when you started. You said that you picked on a lot in school. Is that what drove you to pick up the gloves?
Not exactly to pick up the glove, but I get bullied at school. Like, usually I was so angry. What, I am a boy, right? So, what I'm doing here in the school days, why I always getting hit, why I can't punch them back. So one of my good friend asked me to come, take boxing classes, join with him. So I like, okay, this is a martial arts, free what? Just give a try.
And so, it was just for fun, lah.
Yeah,
back then,
for
right?
fun. So, but I entered for fun. It came a long way until here.
Yeah, did it go by quickly for you? You know, from the first day you started to about now.
No, it's been 5 years. For the first year, I was like so happy learning that. Like, yeah, I'm learning something new. Like, new what? So nobody's learned anything about like that in my school days. Mm. So I'm the first guy. So I was like, okay, something good. That's fitness. Cool.
So you had about 90-ish amateur, 98 amateur
yeah.
fights.
Now it's going to be, yeah, 98.
Yeah. And do you remember the moment where you decided, okay, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm really 98 matches in, I must go all the way, go pro.
The last event was before the SEA Games.
Okay.
See, once I was in ASEAN Games with Malaysian national team. So my team also sent me to ASEAN Games as well as the Uzbekistan. That time I was in Uzbekistan. Yep. My coach all asked me, okay, why you join the ASEAN game? They was talking to MSN Malaysia. So they asked me, okay, come join. So from there, like, I not get too much attention from national Malaysia team, something like that. So from there, I decide within, I talk to my coaches, my manager. Before that, I don't even have a manager. I have my coach and my Vladimir Boxing Gym. So I talk to them. So they say, okay, let's fix a team. You jump into pro.
Right, just straight in.
Yeah, straight away. Don't talk too much, that's all. We end here. No need amateur for you.
Wow, you're just thrown into the deep end, huh?
Yeah.
This is a common thing I find. I interviewed Miraj Khan. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys know
him. Yeah, we know Miraj, yeah.
And same story as you, you know, he picked on a lot in school. Is it fair to say that most fighters, the fire stem from, you know, their background and their past?
It depends. You've got some boys who actually come from boxing families.
Yep.
You know, the interest gets sparked into them because their fathers or their grandfathers would be into boxing.
Like Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, like Floyd Mayweather, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and right in the opposite, in retrospect, you have guys like Manny Pacquiao who came from impoverished neighborhoods who literally had to fight for their lives. And the only way of survival was to fight for food because Pacquiao used to fight every weekend and earned 100 pesos to buy 5 kilos of rice to feed his... you know, his family and his siblings. Mm. So it really depends on, because boxing is a sport that's often a reflection of the community and the society the boxers come from. If you look back at all of these great boxers, Mike, tell them, the great boxers who've really made it big in boxing, who are in the Boxing Hall of Fame, they often come from really rough neighborhoods. Mm. You talk about Tyson and whatnot. Yep.
And as a spectator's point of view, you tend to root for, you know, these kind of boxers, you know, because they have... kind of like an underdog story to
yeah,
to
because if you see, boxing has always had this drought because it has never consistently had a star. We had Mike Tyson, who was a global superstar, and then the fall of Tyson, that's it. You know, every other boxing superstar that ever emerged in boxing was only known within the boxing society, right, within that inner circle. Mm. I think Manny Pacquiao is right now, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, one of the very few boxers right now who have superseded that circle of, you know, inner boxing fans, a casual boxing fan to the casual sports fan, yeah, up to a non-casual sports fan. So, yeah, I mean, it's often something that we really need to wait for, but... I think now with the emergence of pro boxing in Malaysia, with lots of promoters coming up and promoting independent professional boxing shows, it gives an opportunity for people like Tina.
Definitely. I think the last big fight we had here was the Buckner Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, Buckner Ali fight, which had a lots and lots of... played a significant role in the history of boxing because that was the last fight where the referee acted as the judge. Because historically in boxing, you had 4 judges. You had 3 judges at ringside, and then you have the 4th judge, who was also the referee. But it was during that fight when they decided to oust the referee from being the judge, and the referee's sole job is just to, you know, give both men the chance, a fair right. chance at fighting in the ring. Yeah.
And that has been the protocol too.
That has
today.
Been the protocol, yeah.
Tina, talk to me about your time in Uzbekistan. You spent a year there.
Yep. A year was mixed with funds, hard work, like pain, all through that. For the first month, I've been there. So for the first month, I was like a newborn baby at there.
New environment,
yeah,
new people.
The cold weather, -2 degrees. So like so cold, I would sleep with 2 or 3 pillows within a round of me.
He used to ask for extra blankets.
Yeah, extra blankets.
So warm.
I get some injection at there, so make my body hot, even though. So training time, like morning 2 hours, 8 o'clock here. That at that time, there 8 o'clock here going to be like 10.
Mm.
So I was like, wow, 8 o'clock. It was nice sleep, man. Even though if we check our Malaysian local time, it's going to be 11.
Right.
It's good one for us. 11 o'clock, wake up, train. So 8 o'clock at there, I wake up, train. Was new kind of very new thing for me.
Right. So when you're looking around the whole boxing scene.
Yep, the boxing scene from Malaysia and them, there's a lot of difference.
Yeah, do tell.
For them, there's a life. Boxing,
it's a culture.
Yeah,
right.
It's a culture for them.
Gotcha.
Combat sports are culture for the Central Asian guys. Men's always go for boxing, judo, and wrestling. None other sports. Girls go for taekwondo, something like that.
Oh, it's all martial arts.
Yeah, all martial arts. Yeah. So one, I've been there. If I'm not wrong, Tashkent area, Chirchik its name. It's a village, and village contain a lot of boxer. Whole in each house have 2 or 3 boxers.
Wow, okay.
Everybody,
you can see that it's really a big phenomenon.
Oh yeah, yep. Eastern European countries, Kazakhstan.
European countries, right?
Eastern European countries,
okay.
Kazakhstan. But ironically, as much as these countries have a rich history in boxing and they have an everlasting supply of boxing talent.
Mm-hmm.
The talents are limited only to amateur boxing. They don't turn pro.
Why is that?
Yeah, because the local government, you know, I mean, it really depends on the local agenda of the government, because sometimes they would feel that if we lose out a boxer to pro boxing, then we wouldn't have a representative to represent, to carry our flag in the Olympics or in the Asian Games or whatever it is. So yeah, that's always been a dilemma in boxing. But so Ukraine, Kazakhstan, the current middleweight champion, Gennady Golovkin, he's a big star in boxing. He's from Kazakhstan. Lomachenko, he's from Ukraine.
Yep.
And then right now, there's a resurgence of Uzbek amateur boxers who have now currently turned pro. And two of the world champions from Uzbekistan belong to our gym.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the WBC silver welterweight champion. His name is Kudratilo. He's part of our stable. And the WBC silver super middleweight champion, his name is Azizbek. He's part of our stable.
Great
as well.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Tina, talk to me about your coach,
Ilgar Aliyev.
Yes.
Ilgar Aliyev, he is a nice guy. First, I drop out from national junior team.
Okay.
So once I drop out from there, I got a call from Vladimir Boxing Gym. They called me, asked me to come over to their gym and train with them. So I went there. First day I went there, I was looking at this guy, Ilgar Aliyev. He's my coach. I was looking. Who the hell is he? So big, so tall. Maybe like Bigfoot or something like that. Standing in front of me. Wow. Like
hefty,
that.
Hefty guy.
Yeah.
Did that intimidate you or, you know, give you a more passion? Okay, I want to be like that.
No, but like... But
he looked rather unfit though, the first sight.
Yeah,
but
first sight. He's not unfit. Even you can't think he's the coach. Are you sure? Something
apart
like
from
that.
His huge forearms, you know, when you look at his...
So first day...
he was...
Hopefully he's not listening to this.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's okay even if he does. We've got a great relationship with him. Yeah, yeah.
So train with him. First day, they asked me to spar.
Okay.
Spa straight away, not talk too much. They asked me to spa.
Maybe because they saw the talent straight away in you.
No, they.
You think so?
Yeah, because I dropped out from junior, right?
Right.
So they asked me to spa. So I spa with one of them. My coaches was excited. You southpaw? Yeah. Okay, I was a southpaw. He was excited. My coach was a southpaw guy. So he was so excited. He was, okay, I want to take this boy. I want to teach him. I want to lead him up.
You're currently undefeated, 5-0, 5-0
yep.
Right now.
Two
knockouts, yes. Obviously, you like to go, you know, forever.
Yep.
But what do you plan to do to keep this streak going?
That one, my whole team will plan out for me. My work is to train and be fit, always go under their advice. They will manage how to fight, with whom I'm going to fight, which level I'm going to.
See, it's very important and it's crucial that a professional boxer has a manager, because then it eliminates the fear of that boxer of looking for a next fight and planning out his journey and letting him evolve. It's like, just like you planting a seed. You know, you have to harness it, pour water, let it blossom into a flower, and then let it be seen and known to the world. So our contention for Tina is that we want to turn him into a world champion contender, right? It's not as simple as just asking him to hit the gym every day and train. It also involves a series of planning and let him evolve as a professional boxer. So every time Tina steps into the ring to fight in his pro fight, he's actually working towards becoming a six-rounder right now. Because when amateur boxers turn professional, they don't immediately jump into being 10-round fighters. They gradually, progressively move up. So from a four-rounder, Tina now is working towards becoming... Our current objective right now is to let Tina evolve from being a four-round fighter to a six-round fighter. So once he's matured to that stage, then eventually we move on to eight rounds. And then once he's strong enough and he has the apt to fight 10 to 12 rounds, that's when we can move into challenge for a world title.
Is it all stamina?
It's about stamina, it's about character, it's about grit, it's about heart. Because they always say in boxing that the stamina is only able to bring the boxer up to the fifth or the sixth round. That's okay. It. Beyond that, it's his character.
Right.
It's his will, desire to win. It's more than just stamina. But of course, stamina plays an important role. Tina has to do a lot of road work every day. We don't want him to be a marathon runner, so we limit his road work. Because sometimes too much of road work shrinks your muscle.
Who has been your biggest challenge, or rather biggest fight so far?
Biggest fight? The coming 16 July is going to be my very
15 July.
Fight.
15 July, yeah.
15 July.
15 July.
But of that five fights that you had?
Five fights, that was like... I've been trained for that, so I was like, okay, this fight, we can win.
I would like to just speak on his behalf.
Sure.
I think one of his most notable victories, I guess, in the five fights, because I can speak for him because I wrote about that fight and I covered that fight myself, was his fight in Indonesia. When he fought in a military camp.
Yep.
In a military camp.
Yeah, it was out. So it was his first fight outside the country as a pro. And it was in uncharted territory. So it was fighting in a military camp. So, you know, boxing has this thing, you know, they always say if you're fighting in the other fighter's hometown, you better beat him by knockout, because if you don't beat him by way of knockout and the fight goes the distance, you know,
the
crowd's not going to be happy and he may be given a hometown decision. So we were worried about that. But nevertheless, it was in favor of us, and Tina was pretty worried about that as well. But yeah, I think by far he was confident of himself. He knew that he could seal the victory, but... some point, you know, when he walked into the arena, when he saw all of those
supporters,
I think he had
like,
tunnel vision.
Like,
yeah, he was having tunnel vision, but, you know, I had to just console him and say, look, just do your thing and come out victorious.
Tell me about the rituals you do, you know, while you're walking out to the ring. I see lots of people, you know, hip-hop backgrounds, you know, with the whole hoodies going on. What's your style?
For my style, I always keep listening to music. Any kind of music. Just play it through my head. I don't want to interfere with my boxing guy. Just keep relax only. Because this guy will be talking around to me. You must do like that. I straight away put that.
You're not listening to him.
Yeah. keep doing my work though. Because I've been training for that one. So I was like, okay, relax. Okay, when I open, your boy, don't go back for the old days. Get punches from the kids all. Go up, fight like a man.
Mm.
And then when it's happened, you get into the ring, you get punched, means you become crazy already. We cannot tell anything. That's some science between that, you know.
Last few questions, guys. You've been to, you know, Eastern European countries. You've seen the culture. Anil, you covered boxing a lot. You know a lot. What do you think Malaysia needs, you know, to, you know, like you said, we don't have many pros in Malaysia.
Yeah. Professional boxing is, as much as it's a sport, it's also a business. So it's always relied on promoters. So in the US, you know, you've got people like Don King who have become iconic figures, and poster images of them everywhere, you know, and Bob Arum and Oscar De La Hoya. So these are people who actually turn the sport into a business. They play a very essential role in helping develop a professional boxer's career. So probably here in Malaysia, to build a local professional boxing scene, you need more promoters, because there's a lot of work involved in promoting a boxing show, all the way from getting the sanction done and then, you know, selling tickets. You can set a show, but if you're not able to sell tickets, you won't be able to pay the boxer his purse, and that will never motivate him to come back into the ring and give his best again. So it's all about hyping up the fight, glorifying the boxers for every victory that they have. So, yeah, that's something that has to grow. Or, you know, you don't need many promoters as well, as long as one promoter does the job. This is like exactly what we are doing right now, and I speak for myself and the gym, Vladimir's Boxing Gym. So Tina is signed under them. So the Vladimir's Boxing Gym, they promote shows on a big scale. We even have a show coming up in a couple of months. And I manage these boxers. So what we do is we go out and we let people know. You know, people don't know, Malaysians never knew, and no one knew about Tina as well. You know, there are very handful of boxers out there.
Yeah.
But no one goes actively out there to promote them and let people know, look, that there is a boy of this nature with this skill set who has the potential to become a national hero.
Yeah. I also think, you know, apart from promotions, the whole education on boxing, you know,
yeah.
in schools, you have football, we have basketball,
yeah.
but boxing's not really a
yeah.
overseas though.
Yeah, overseas, yeah, because the safety aspect of that as well. Because, you know, ding ding round one, when the fight starts, the level of excitement gets so high that sometimes some boxers tend to neglect their health, and it may just, the fight may end in the ring, and it could potentially end the fighter's career itself at that point of time. And it's a far, it's a riskier sport as opposed to tennis or, you know, soccer,
sure,
or
yeah.
other sports. So probably that's not an option, preferred choice by parents to, you know, encourage the kids to pursue boxing. Yeah.
That was 20-year-old boxer Tina Talayan and his manager Anil Kumar, who will be part of the Fight of Champions at Axiata Arena on July 15. And with that, we've come to the end of the episode. If you'd like to check out the interview again, do head over to our website, www.bfm.my, for the podcast. If you'd like to tweet us, do tweet us. We're at BFM Radio. And also don't forget to download our latest app via Google Play and the App Store. My name is Darryl Ong. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week right here on Banan, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world, only here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.